In the battle of the self-driving vacuum cleaners, we have Bedford-based iRobot. And the same corner of Massachusetts, there's Needham-based Shark Ninja. The two companies are jostling to be leaders in the high-tech appliance industry. And iRobot just notched a big win. Okay, it was a medium win against Shark Ninja, but these marquee companies in Boston's industry are working through a tough economic climate. The battles matter, just like everyone else is working through a tough economic climate, and their intellectual property matters. So who really winds up on top in all of this? Here with us as part of our regular segment Tech Talk, Boston Globe technology writer Hiawatha Bray. Hey, welcome back.
Glad to be here. And who ends up on top? It could be Amazon. So, yeah.
Right, exactly.
So we got you got to know. Jeff Bezos, he's in the middle of everything.
He seems to be. All right. Yeah. So I want to start. So what is going on here is kind of an intellectual property fight, right?
Oh, it's a mess. It's a mess because Shark Ninja is the name of the company. They started out in Canada. They have since moved their headquarters down to Needham, like you said, but they're actually owned by a company in China.
Because, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Well, not of course, but they have a lot of their stuff made in China, as did iRobot, though they have been systematically moving out of China ever since the Trump administration and all the sanctions. I think most of their stuff is now in Malaysia. But in any case, iRobot they first invented this market segment, and they have earned an undying place in technology history. iRobot was the first company anywhere in the world to build a robot that consumers would want to go out and buy.
Early 2000s.
That's right. Early 2000s, the original Roomba was the first successful consumer robot. And nobody will ever take that away from them. But Shark Ninja has been taking away a lot of market share. And iRobot claims that it's largely because they have been stealing their intellectual property. And so over the years, they have filed multiple patent lawsuits, some of which are still pending. But so far, for the most part, iRobot has lost a lot of these patent lawsuits. In some cases, the patents were even held to be invalid. So iRobot had real trouble. So what they did was they hit the panic button. Well, that's not fair. Let's call it the panic button. They took another route. They decided to sue at the International Trade Court, which is a very different thing. If you can convince the International Trade Court that your patent is being violated, they will issue an injunction telling a company that they cannot import any device that contains a violation of the patent. And so finally, recently, iRobot won one. The International Trade Court looked at a bunch of their patents and basically rejected most of them, but then said, this
is
one patent they violated. And so now iRobot can say that Shark Ninja can no longer import, I forget the official name of the product, but it was one of their products. And Shark Ninja came back and said, yeah, so we stopped using that technology. We stopped using that technology in that product. It is no longer there. We redesigned it to make sure nothing we had would violate your patents. So in effect, iRobot won this Pyrrhic victory. It's like when, what's her name? Was it? She lost that lawsuit and they made her pay a dollar?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, right. Okay.
They made her pay a dollar, and so that's what this is.
So here's why I found this interesting. At first it was interesting. I'm like, oh, right. Big lawsuit. Turns out it's kind of a nothing burger.
It's kind of a nothing burger in terms of its impact.
What was interesting to me is this is robotics. It's Bedford. It's Needham. These are companies that really matter. They're local here,
yep.
And they're playing on a global landscape.
We are right here, one of the world centers. I don't know, you could argue about whether we are the world center, but we are one of the world centers for robotics. Absolutely. No doubt about it. And, you know, of course, that's a lot of it. Ironically, a lot of it has to do with Amazon. Amazon actually helped because they came in and bought this local company called Kiva Systems that was making robots that they were using in their warehouses. And people were horrified because a lot of other companies use Kiva robots. And so bunch of people who worked at Kiva said, we need to start another robot company so people can get these even if Amazon won't sell them to them. And other companies, there was one case of a company that owned warehouses, and they said, we can't rely on these guys. We got to start building our own robots. And within like 5 or 6 years, this city had something like 6 or 7 different robot manufacturers making logistics robots. These are the robots that pick up boxes and move stuff around. They are the most unsexy, the most boring area of robotics. Everybody is rushing to get into this business because the money is insane.
And it's here.
And it's mostly here. It's incredible. Six River Systems, Locus, Vecna, Amazon has kept its robot business here. Amazon Robotics is here. Right Hand Robotics. Boston Dynamics, the ones who make the robots that walk around on legs. Last year, they started making warehouse robots because they realized that's where the money was. So you got Boston Dynamics doing all this stuff. It's absolutely incredible. Yesterday, Walmart announced that by 2026, 65% of their stores are going to be at least partially automated. That means robots all over the place. And a lot of those robots are probably going to be made by local companies. It's amazing. We've got a bunch of robot companies here. There's one called Lert and another one called Takeoff. And they are the robots, like if you go to a store to do a pickup, you've ordered the merchandise and you're just going to go there and pick it up. In many stores, there's going to be a robot in the back room that's picking out the merchandise that you ordered and dropping it into a bin so that you can come get it. And these local companies, Lert and Takeoff, make those kinds of robots. And so does Berkshire Grey, I think. Berkshire Grey, which just got acquired by SoftBank last week. They've been having some financial troubles, but they are in this business as well. And SoftBank, the big Japanese company, is now buying them out. So this is huge.
So this is the next piece of this. And you talked about Jeff Bezos and Amazon at the beginning. And now we come full circle back to iRobot, right?
Right.
Because the other thing that's going on is Amazon wants to buy iRobot. Bedford-based company,
absolutely,
founded here by Colin Engel, but both here in the United States and in the UK. So here, the Fair Trade Commission in the UK, the Competition and Markets Authority are both saying, hey, maybe not so fast.
Yeah, that is a real issue because, you know, and this is another one of those cases here in the United States where what you're seeing is a difference between previous administrations and the Biden administration. Up until, like, for the last 40 or so years, the famous American jurist Robert Bork came up with a view of antitrust that has basically been locked in U.S. law, which is you can't really punish a company for being big just because they're big. The only question is what they're doing hurting consumers? If it isn't, let them go. That's the rule we've had up to now. The current administration, like people like Lina Khan, who's in charge of the FTC, she says bigness in itself is something we should be suspicious of. And so when a company gets too big, we need to step in. That's why, for example, they are trying to stop which company is it? Meta, from buying another software company that they wanted to build as part of their VR and metaverse initiative. They just don't want them to dominate the metaverse by
they're
simply going out and buying.
Suspicious of the size.
Right. And so now they're saying, we don't think Amazon should be allowed to go out and just buy another robot company because it will make them all the bigger. In addition, iRobot's robots are designed to collect huge amounts of data about the houses in which they work. They're terrified about the potential privacy implications. Amazon already knows almost everything there is to know about us. Suppose they also know what our houses look like. They're going to have robots that are going to be inside our houses mapping everything in them.
And you have said in the past that you feel it's time for a level of privacy law that we don't have.
Absolutely. And that's one of the biggest problems in America. And that's like it ties into TikTok. Do you really want to ban TikTok? That's not really the issue. The issue is we allow all sorts of companies to collect insane amounts of data. And whether they're Chinese or American isn't necessarily a big deal. So we can either ban them from collecting the data or, which I think is more likely, we can set extremely tight restrictions on what they can do with whatever data that they collect. We want them to collect some of this data because it lets them deliver a lot of really cool services to us. But should they be allowed to sell it to other companies? I don't know. I think that's a real problem. And we need tougher laws on that. And that is that's one of the other reasons why people are nervous about Amazon.
So that's how we get, listener, from Needham and Bedford in a rumble over a patent all the way to Amazon and iRobot and privacy. But now we're going to shift gears for a minute because I think this other one's pretty fascinating too. Let me give you a little sound here. You're cracking up, aren't you? I hate it. I hate it. But if you're a certain age, you might remember that sound vividly. But here's what you might be less familiar with.
Welcome. This is the first of two videotapes on the subject of Ethernet. All of the material comes from a paper published in the Communications of the ACM in July 76. Okay, now we'll go and we'll look at the slides and you will find what the Ethernet's about.
It's Bob Metcalf, well-known Boston area writer, venture capitalist. He's also known as one of the fathers of the Ethernet, and he just won the 2023 Turing Award. It's akin to the Nobel Prize. There's $1 million associated with us. Tell us about the prize, Bob Metcalf. How big of a deal is this?
Well, it's a very big deal. The only people who win the Turing Prize are, well, it's all you have to do is think of its name. Alan Turing is considered one of the inventors of computing, the British mathematician who helped crack German codes during World War II, a legendary computer scientist, one of the first computer scientists. And people like, for example, Tim Berners-Lee, who invented the World Wide Web, is a previous winner. Marvin Minsky, who basically invented the whole science of artificial intelligence, is a previous winner. And so now Bob Metcalf is in that exalted company because he was the guy who figured out a really good way to connect computers to each other using a piece of wire, which now seems second nature to us. But believe me, back in the 1970s, nobody had any idea how to do it. And he and his colleagues figured this out. They were working at a place which once was legendary. It was at Xerox Corporation in a laboratory, the Palo Alto Research Institute. That was the place.
It was called Park.
It
right?
was called Park.
Like that?
It was the home. That was where they invented the laser printer. That was where they invented the graphical user interface where you point and click on the screen. That
the
was
old GUI.
The GUI was invented there. That was where some people would say the Xerox Alto was the first true personal computer. They built that there, and they invented Ethernet there. And he is one of his colleagues. I believe his name is David Boggs, I think his name is.
The late David Boggs.
The late David Boggs figured this out. What they basically did was figure out a way so that if there was a problem on the network would automatically self-correct so that if a packet of data was sent and it didn't get through, it would know the packet didn't get through. It would wait a random period of time and resend it. And that sounds really simple, but figuring out how to do it and making it work was incredibly complicated, but it did work. They came up with this really efficient way that was relatively cheap and simple to let these things talk to each other. They were up against IBM, which that might not mean anything nowadays because IBM is just another company. In the 1970s, IBM was one of the most massive, powerful institutions on Earth. They had their own version for the same technology. It was called Token Ring. Nobody even remembers it anymore because it was designed to work on IBM equipment. Ethernet was designed to work on anybody's equipment.
And today, the reason that computers inside a building in a company can talk to each other is because of what Metcalfe and Boggs did.
Absolutely. And we just take it for granted. The idea that your computer should be able to talk to any other computer, it's not all Ethernet anymore, of course, because you all have Wi-Fi and other things, but they were the ones to crack the code and say, here's how you make two computers talk to each other easily by just plugging something in.
And have you had any comments from Metcalfe? Have you been in touch with him?
Well,
at
of
all?
Course. He's thrilled. I wrote about it. He said, you know, this is a great honor. It's $1 million and he's still going strong. He has, he's back on the faculty at MIT now. He's been on the faculty of University of Texas for a long time. He used to be a columnist or he was famous. He made some weird prediction when he was the editor of Computer World. It didn't come true. He promised that he would put his column in a blender, mix it up, and drink it. And he did. And I think it was at a major computer convention. And he got up and did it. He's a strange, funny, wonderful human being.
All right. Hiawatha Bray, tech writer for the Boston Globe. Always enjoy Tech Talk with you. Thank you so much.
It's always fun.